Let me open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 5. I am planning to share a message that I was assigned last week at Great Lakes. And it's a message that I'm sure all of you have heard at least one message on this subject in your life. But it's also a subject that I happen to know, without knowing you very well, that you need it. Because it's a doctrinal message, and it's a message that is fundamental to whether or not you're a Christian. It's a message that is fundamental to whether or not you're going to make it, and whether or not you're going to have the smile of God's approval on your life. All these things need to be considered as we look at this passage here in Matthew 5. I'd like to have to share a message this morning on the doctrine of non-resistance. And I know that this is a foundational subject to the Mennonite faith. It's one of our defining characteristics. The world doesn't always get it right. They call us peace-loving, and that misleads them into thinking we're pacifistic. I'm not planning to spend a lot of time explaining the difference today, but there is a difference. But we have a big, thick book that is in many of our homes called The Martyr's Mirror. And on the front of that page, that book, is a picture from about 1500. I don't have the exact date. And a man is falling through the ice, and a man is bending over, picking him out. And in that classic picture is a story of non-resistance. It is Dirk Willems who was being chased for his faith. And he is being chased across land and across canal, and he crosses the river, the pond, and it's frozen, and halfway across, or somewhere along the way, the thief catcher is pelting after him, and Dirk makes it across, but the thief catcher does not. And in a glorious demonstration of the character of Jesus Christ, the hunted man turns around and comes back, and you have that picture. He's reaching out his hand to pull him out. Did it make him a millionaire? Did he win the lottery? Did he get a nice car out of it? Was he a hero on CNN or Fox News? They had none of those things. They simply captured him, and later he was executed for his faith. But that's non-resistance in that picture. Non-resistance is one of the twin pillars of our creed. It's right up there with our doctrines of separation. And it doesn't take a lot of Bible study from a practical standpoint to understand why separation and non-resistance are required subjects at Bible school. You almost can't be a Christian without understanding and practicing those doctrines. And if you don't have them, you're going to really flounder like the thief catcher in the water. But I find that non-resistance is a subject that we can spend 3 weeks at Bible school talking about, and the subjects get broad and wide because the doctrine is that broad and wide, and they get lively. And after a while, we got to let the dinner bell bring us to a close because we still haven't figured out whether it's legal to go 56 or 55. And sometimes I've taught the course 3 times at Bible school. I love it. But sometimes I get weary of those discussions because I know they don't help you in real life. And those young people will grow up to find out that that was kind of a waste of time anyway. And they'll get tested on a much more serious note. And my burden this morning is that we would look at this because I find as I am growing up and moving among the conservative churches that we can preach really, really good sermons on this subject, but for the most part, at least half of us are kind of wishy-washy on what you do when I break into your house and take your wallet. You at least want to call the cops and make sure, give them a chance to make it happen. And I want you to think about that as we read the scriptures. Matthew 5, verse 38. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek and turn to him also the... Let me start over. That ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. I'll just stop reading there. Many studies start here with this scripture as the beginning. The word non-resistance is not in the Bible, but it's a coined term that comes out of verse 39, ye resist not evil. Non-resistance. Now, what Jesus is teaching here is that when ugly or mean or hard things happen to you, you don't fight back. Did you ever do that in your life? Well, I'm sure for all of us, as you go back into our childhood, we did it at least once. It is the norm for little children, when their toy is taken, to do something between bite them, claw them, grab another toy, club them, or just grab it and jerk it back. You don't touch my toy. And this is something that must be trained out of children and redeemed out of big people. Because we want blood for our offenses the whole way through life unless something happens to us. This is how life is. We have terms like fair. And this comes out in children again and again. It's not fair. Well, I'm telling you right now, what Jesus is teaching in Matthew 5, 38 to 42 will never be fair. You got to choose between whether you want a fair life or you want a non-resistant life. That's your choices. Okay? And it grieves me to hear even big adult Mennonites plead for fairness, because I wonder if they still understand Matthew 5. I know that fairness feels good. I know that I sleep better when I know that it's fair. But I'm not sure that the Bible ever teaches that life has to be fair for the child of God. It most certainly wasn't for the Christ who taught this. You see, that's something we ought to catch in the beginning, and that what Jesus asks his people to do, his followers, his disciples in Matthew 5, is something that he practiced himself. You know Isaiah 53. You know what it says about Jesus at his time of crucifixion? It says he was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth. And the centurion marveled when he died and said, truly this was the Son of God. What did he see? He saw the suffering lamb, and his eyes were open, and he said, that's not human, that's divine. When evil is thrust upon us, God gives us no other plan than to be non-resistant. This is the plan. This is how we're going to do it. Now, this doesn't answer all the questions, and we'll work at some of the questions this morning, and the rest you'll have to, by his grace and his spirit, figure out yourself. But Jesus wanted this to be a practical doctrine. This is why there are four illustrations. If someone smites you on the right cheek, turn to him the left. If someone sues you at the law, they did slap each other back then. And we don't slap each other too much. You can get turned in for that kind of thing. And so we've learned to inflict our anger other ways. You can always get back at somebody if you want to. You just got to learn the ropes and the rules. But Jesus says, now this, around here I know people slap each other because they have an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth doctrine. Now, they also had this issue where a policeman could stop you and make you give him a ride or carry his things. They also, and that was a practical illustration. They also had this possibility, a real-life possibility, that when you were doing your own thing, you could be sued at the law. For, it doesn't even say what for. And they take away your coat, give him your cloak also. It's a radical doctrine. Give to him that would borrow of thee, and from him that would him that asketh, and from him that would borrow, don't turn away. So non-resistance is a very practical doctrine. It's an everyday doctrine. Everyday means that it's ordinary or common, like your everyday clothes. It also means it's frequent. The dentist says you should floss every day, and non-resistance is an everyday doctrine. But it takes surrender to do it. I found that so, and I'm sure you have too as you practiced it. We have this problem that bad things happen to people. Bad people do bad things to other people. And I don't know all the reasons, but I can tell you two of the primary reasons why bad things are done by bad people to other people. And one is they do it because they are selfish and they simply want to use that other person for whatever they can get out of it. But the second reason that people do bad things to people is because they hate the person. And maybe as a child you can remember a moment in time where you looked at that schoolmate, or you looked at that cousin, or you looked at that second cousin, and you said, "That guy," and then you did something. And you were one of those people. But we're focusing on what the Christian does when that is turned toward him. And some of it may appear almost random, almost happenstance, and some of it, you know exactly what's going on. But the focus taught by Christ is that when that happens, you do not fight back. Now let's read on. "Ye have heard that it hath been said, Thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies and bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. Here he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and he sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. For if ye love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? And if you salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." And we flip through our Bibles and we get to verse 48 and we say, what does that ever mean? Perfect. None of us is perfect. We all make mistakes. And we stop and we don't bother reading the context. Here is how you are perfect. The doctrine of non-resistance is the pathway to perfection. It's always been written here. You could have read it for yourself. It's not very hard being perfect when you're very non-resistant, because that's the whole context here. It took me, I believe, at least one time through the study of non-resistance to catch on that section 38 to 42 and section 43 to 48 are indelibly tied together. But I caught on to it one day when I was studying Romans 12, and it has the same doctrine, but it's all mixed together. That whole sect, they're not separated out. Now look over at Romans 12. And I want you to catch this because it's so important. It will help you and I to understand the why of non-resistance. Romans 12:14, "Bless them which persecute you, bless and curse not. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Be of the same mind one toward another, mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourself, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, Vengeance is mine, I will repay. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good." And so, I must point out to you that there are two arms or two segments of non-resistance. One is that when the bad thing, whatever the thing is, happens to Duane, he doesn't fight back. But arm number two is that in that very moment, Duane will look for places and ways to bring back good for evil. And Jesus explains the whole logic of this in Matthew 5. And it's one that I don't hear taught very much, but it is a very, very high calling. He says that we are to love our enemies, and we are supposed to bless. We are supposed to, in our resisting not, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me just stop back at Romans 12 again. You have the resist not, and you have the respond with acts of love. Jesus says through the scriptures in Romans 12 that vengeance is his. God says, I will repay. That's actually a quote from the Old Testament. It's amazing that Romans just pulls something. We often think of non-resistance as a New Testament doctrine, and it is in the sense in that it drew a sharp line between the church and the state in a way that the Israelites never knew before. They were given authority to be a state and to punish the evildoer both locally and internationally. But when Jesus said, I am building a new kingdom, and it's not of this world, my servants won't fight. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight? That's John 18. But what he's doing is he separated the church and the state. Non-resistance will never make any sense or motivate anyone unless you separate the church and the state. And you can think that through, and it's true. But here we have this admonishment that when deeds of ill are done to me, I not only accept and absorb, but I turn around and I love back. And he gives this metaphor in Romans 12 that is pulled out of Proverbs 25:22, where you heap coals of fire. And Samuel Wesley wrote a little poem, and I think this is an excerpt that I found. I don't think it's the whole poem, but it says this: so artists melt the sullen ore of lead by keeping coals of fire upon the head. In the kind warmth, the metal learns to glow, and pure from dross, the silver drops below. Here is what is the essence of non-resistance, and that is, number one, you don't fight back. You're helpless, you're vulnerable, and kind of stupid if you ask the world. But in the second response, the human response is to pray, to bless, to give kindness. And it says in the Bible that when you do this, it is like the furnace where you put in this ore and you set the ore on a flame or on a heat. And the heat comes up because heat rises and the pure silver drops off and the dross is burned up. The pathway of non-resistance is the opening of a door into the kingdom that opens no other way. I have in my one quote book a little story that goes like this. A Hindu manufacturer told Stanley Jones why he had come to the week of meetings. Years ago, when I was a boy in India, we heckled a missionary preaching in the bazaar. We threw tomatoes at him. He wiped off the tomato juice from his face. Then after the meeting, he took us to the sweet shop and bought us sweets. I saw the love of Christ that day, and that's why I'm here tonight. Do you see the whole working dynamic? What if the missionary had thrown the tomatoes back? That would have been fair. Make their faces drip with juice. Go down to Myerstown and sell that concept. It sells well. It's very human. Eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But one day a missionary took the juice in the face, and then he bought the sweets, and years later a man's come knocking and says, I saw the love of Christ. I want to know more. Now go back to Matthew 5. I say unto you, love your enemies and bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. Please understand that this is not just something. It's not, okay, there are some religions that have acts of service that you do to prove that you belong. Non-resistance is not an act of service to prove that you belong. It is an act of service that I will do to demonstrate to myself, to the Lord, but mostly to the people that need to see it, that I am one of God's children. And he says that when you demonstrate non-resistance, you become my messenger. You become my preacher. And here is what happens. He gives two illustrations of how God relates to people. God relates to people in a very loving way, in a very, I almost said indifferent, that's not the word I want, impartial way is the word I want. And he takes you to the sun that came up this morning and the rain that came down too many times the last few weeks, and he says, when you practice non-resistance, you are like me making the sun come up. You are like me making it rain. When it rains, does it only rain on Pilgrim Conference members? And if someone's underproving, you find a dry spot at their farm or their little garden? Well, let's go to the Mennonites. Now let's go to all Christianity, because we know that when we get 3 inches here, my adulterous neighbor gets 3 inches as well. And what the purpose of non-resistance is for you and I to be instruments of rain. Oh, you mean it's not about our glory? You mean we don't get a feather in our hat? Not really. I mean, how many people, only a few people, ever look at the sun coming up and think about what made that sun come up? But when they do, they know that it was the benevolence of God. Should he decide tomorrow morning it shall not happen, you can drive your truck as far as you want and farm as many fields as you want to in the dark, but it ain't coming up. Your sun will come up tomorrow because God loves you one more time. And it's not your goodness, and it's not your majesty, and it's not your carefulness or your faithfulness. It's simply the benevolence of an almighty sovereign God. And when we are called to serve in this way, that an evil man strikes out the fist and it catches me right here, and I take it on this one, and then I look for a way to make it rain on him, God can see his son, and he says, there's a perfect one. That's what this perfection is all about. It's not about some impeccable, did I say the right thing? Whoops, I hope I wasn't too harsh with that word. And we get ourselves all in a swivet trying to figure out if we were perfect, when what he was really calling us to do was to simply love the people that hate us. That's the perfection that's taught here. And this is why it must stay at the center of your life. For if you stray from it and you start inflicting ill and you make things fair and you say, well, he did that and so I'm going to do this and he has to learn a couple of things. One of the things you have to do to understand the doctrine of non-resistance is you have to understand divine authority. A man who is divinely charged to deal with good and evil is different than the man who is not. And there is much about our world that we are not divinely authorized to deal with. There are some cases I think we're divinely appointed as parents to exercise authority over our children in our homes. I think that there is divine authority appointed in the church, and the meetings are had, and the discussions are given, and the brothers' meetings are had, and people are praised, and people are rebuked, and that's divine authority. And if you try to mix the doctrine of non-resistance in as the foundation of the doctrines of authority, it gets terribly confusing. That doesn't mean you can't bless somebody that defies the home or the church, and you most certainly want to pray for them, but I'm talking about the distinct difference between authority that allowed David to kill Goliath versus authority that forbid him to take the life of Saul. And he said, no, Adonijah, Abishai, one of them A's, we're not touching this man. The same man who could sling a stone through the skull of a giant could not touch the king who slept in front of him. And it all has to do with divine authority. When divine authority did not permit, the same man could not slay. Okay? Please understand that, because it'll confuse you if you don't. You'll get into real life applications of, is this a non-resistance situation or isn't it? And you won't know what to do. But we are called to be the rain and the sunshine for the world. It really does come into practical life. Our forefathers, our generation, we think about it sometimes that war could come yet again to U.S. and demand that our sons and daughters go with it. And what will we say? And what will we do? And I am blessed with the vision of our brethren to have things like CASP, to attempt to pave the way for freedom for our sons and daughters should the draft come back. It needs to be crystal clear in our minds that the kingdom is not of this world, and the M16 and the F16 are not our toys, because we've been called to heal and to be the sun and the rain for the world. When you start going down the trail of what civil authority does with weapons in controlling people, it is very true that all of their attempts focus very much on making the world a better place. And who wouldn't want the world to be a better place? We do pray for kings, that we may live quiet and peaceable lives. But it's not our focus. Our focus is on making it rain. Our focus is on making the sun come up. And really, what we're actually doing is we are inviting people into the kingdom, which is a better place, than trying to make the world a better place. I would just like to call all of us to abandon all hope that this world can be a better place, because it isn't going to serve us if we serve it. The world cannot be made a better place. Evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse. But we have a full life ahead of us, making it rain and making the sun come up. And that's what this perfection, this doctrine, okay, will we go to war? In simple English, we would say, what for? Well, ISIS. Yeah, I know about ISIS. And so if we shoot them all, what have we done? Well, we shot them all, and now they receive their reward. Is that our calling? Is that how you make it rain? Well, what are we supposed to do? They might kill us. Oh, they have been. But you know what else? Well, I'll give you an illustration a little later. Jury duty. Setting ourselves up in the place of common authority and saying, you are guilty, he is not. Jesus said, my kingdom, he that is without sin, let him cast the first stone. And we stray far from the calling of the master when we simply acknowledge that, yeah, we'd be glad to decide if the robber needs to go to jail or not. It's when you understand the dynamics of the kingdom, we not only are wasting our time, we've left the course to sit in judgment. We ought to look at our own beams instead of someone else's motes. Voting. Oh, the kingdoms are separate, earth and heaven. I have a friend who is from non-Mennonite background. He told me recently that he got an email from an old friend in California, an evangelical Christian, and the man wrote to him that he is so weary of trying to make the world a better place through the voting booth. He said, it's just not worth it. They're all rotten. This was this man's testimony. But what if they were all good? What if you actually had seven righteous men to put in charge of California? What would the point be? Make it nice and comfortable for the sinners till they die? Even making the world a better place does not serve the eternal picture. And so we do not vote. It's not our kingdom. Peace marches. We don't storm on Washington and make a lot of racket hoping something good will come out of it. Because that's not really a blessing instead of a cursing. This is where we are working with people. One of the things that I hope I can stress this morning is that non-resistance is something that you need to think about on a personal level, not some Mennonite group picture. In other words, well, it goes back to that writing I read years ago where the English theologian was trying to explain what forgiveness is. And he said, people once asked me, well, how can you forgive the Germans? This was in World War II, and he was British. Well, how can you ever forgive the Germans? And he said, he wrote something like this. I say, care not about the Germans. What have you been doing with the man next door? You see, as we make these choices in our real world, it will set the template for what we will do in the world that hasn't come yet. Our boundaries give us guidance in the future. And so, rather than focusing on, would I go to war if compelled? Well, you may think about that, but spend not over much time on that. Please, start talking about what you're going to do when somebody doesn't pay their bill. I'm not a bishop very long, but I've already had to confront a brother for threatening to sue somebody who didn't pay. Right in our own churches. You say, well, he had problems. Well, maybe he did. And we faced them. But you see, this is a real doctrine. And it comes into real life. And I'll guarantee you, I've lived long enough in this community to know that there are people who will come and buy from you because they know you'll never gasp for your money. And they'll give you what they feel like giving. It has happened to me, and I have a choice to make of whether I'm going to wiggle, wiggle, wiggle and get a couple daggers and darts in and see if I can get a couple coins out of these people, or if I'm just going to let it go. And it's hard, and it doesn't make the profit-loss section look good. And we're supposed to be good stewards, aren't we? Ah, yes, we are. But even more than that, we are called to make it rain and to make the sun shine. And that is different than getting all your money on a bill. But these are real life tests. There are unreasonable men. I've had them. I don't know if Harold remembers the time that we sold that big system out there in Carlisle, and the whole time we were working on the contract, the man was bragging to me how he never made the last payment on most of his things. And I started to get the willies of the whole project, but we went ahead. I figured, well, you know, that's a game two people play. Vendors don't deliver. Customers don't pay. But it was only a matter of time till we were in the soup right with everybody else. And in the end, we finally told them, looks like we're not going to be able to satisfy them. We would like to come and pick up our water system. It was the biggest one I ever sold. And we loaded, spent 2 days loading it back up again and brought it home. And even when I go down Route 11, I look down that street and I see that factory, and I still have to decide what I'm going to do with that building. And I wonder if that man is still in there and if he still brags about it. I do know this, that about 9 months after we were done, I got a call one day from another dealer. And he just innocently asked me if I would happen to have, he said he's looking for a big water system. And he started naming the specs exactly of this system. And I said, well, you're not going to believe it. Nobody else has one, but we have one sitting here. It was just used a few months. He said, I know, I put one in after you did. Really? I said, why are you calling me? Well, he actually would be interested in buying it. He thinks he has a place for it. I said, well, did you get paid? He said, I sure did. He said, he started bragging to me how he doesn't pay everybody. And so he said, I went and hired a detective, and we went through his plant. And we identified over a dozen EPA violations going on in the plant. And we made a video of it, and we sat on it. And when he didn't pay, one day I went in his office and I held up the video and I said, you got 24 hours to pay up or we're going public. He said he gave me a check right on the spot. And then he said, I reached out and tore up his warranty in about 20 pieces and said, don't you ever call me again. Who won? This is a real life test. This happened to me. Who made it rain? And who made the sun come up? Which is the perfect way? Well, let's bring it closer home. We got neighbors. Some don't give a rip about our property lines or our things. They'll come and help themselves. And you have to decide what you're going to do about that. Do you know that people can take advantage of us and you can still love them back? And when the thief comes back in the community, you can invite him to your house for a meal. And if he doesn't come, you can offer to take him to a restaurant for a meal. And you can sit with him and you can pay his supper and you can tell them that you still love them. And he doesn't know what to do with that because it wasn't what he expected. I know where that story took place. It's a way of the Father. And I want us to think about these stories. Yes, you might get tested on jury duty sometime, but let's think about these stories and these realities, because I know they're here. I used to live here. This isn't so Mennonite, it's completely nice. We have to apply Matthew 5 to our lives. Guess what? The doctrine of non-resistance gets tested right inside the community of believers. Did you ever think about that? Have you ever been offended by somebody in the church? Well, I know that some people are because I've heard it many, many times. He hurt me. Ah, he hurt you. Yes, 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 he hurt you. Well, what are you going to do now? Well, I'm going to let everybody know that he hurt me. Uh-huh, for what purpose? Like our pain means something in the big picture? Pain is pain is pain. It hurts terribly bad. I can't minimize anybody's pain, including my own. But blowing a trumpet about our pain and who hurt us does not bring us closer to the Father. It has no possibility. But we look for a way to make it rain. The church is a hospital. Every generation, every person in every generation is still learning how the doctrines of the Sermon on the Mount and Romans 12 and Hebrews 11 are going to be real in their life. And in the midst of that, it's like the man once told me that there's two kinds of people in the church, those who need to be absorbed and those who do the absorbing. And I've never forgotten that. But you know what that means? That means you have conflict. It means that people are doing things that offend, and I'm grieved, and I can't believe they did that to me. Oh, yeah. I've been in church like that too. And we don't know what to do with it. But here's what we can do. We can love our enemies. We can bless them that curse us. We can do good to them that hate and pray for them which despitefully use us and persecute us. And so we visit the people even though they've hurt us. And we lay it down. Forgiveness helps. It's the way. But it comes right in. And so you have a young person and he's trying to find his way. And you wish he would grow up once, and he doesn't listen. And the preachers just don't get around, or whatever grief we may have. Let's still think about making it rain and making the sun come up. It comes up into our own family life, as children, as adults. The pecking order lives, and we try to be one big happy family. And that might be the picture that we go out, but there's tussles. This is a broad doctrine, and it drips into every corner of our lives. And I know you're being tested on it only because you're alive. And every moment that you're tested on it is a preparation for the next moment. And you can accept this as a way of life. Non-resistance, I'd like to just point out yet, is the method of coping for persecution in the church. It's the Christian response. That's more normally where our minds go. And we should think a little bit about it, because the reality is that the Bible says in Timothy that all that live godly shall suffer persecution. And it does not say which religious group that is coming from. It doesn't say whether it's going to be Mennonite or non-Mennonite. It does not say whether it's going to be across the ocean or whether it's going to be our own family. Jesus hinted that it could come from our own family because he said that I'm bringing a sword. And truth and righteousness have a stigma to them. Well, non-resistance is the Christian response for persecution. When you are attacked, this is the way that you respond. From a logical point, non-resistance is the only answer to persecution. I don't have some other way to cope. I don't have some other method that, well, if we lift a church-wide offering, we can somehow buy away persecution. Now, that one's not going to work. Never did. That would look more like winning the lottery. It's our only response. About 6 months ago, there was a feature on Fox News where they interviewed a Christian man. I don't know if any of you would have seen this or not. Where they interviewed a Christian man who was attacked. He lived in Africa. He was attacked by Boko Haram. Now, that's kind of the quiet radical Muslim group, but they are as vicious as the ISIS. However, they are way on behind in technology, and so most of their destruction is done with bare hands, stones, and machetes. And their village was pretty much declared to be Christian, and they attacked and killed everybody in the village. But because of an act of God's either love or judgment, I guess you could see it either way, he didn't die. And so he was the only one of the village that lived. And he survived with machete marks and bruises and scars on his body that will stay with him for life. But they are interviewing him, and they said, what was it like? And he was explaining. And at the end of the interview, the interviewer said to this black man, so if you had the opportunity, what would you like to see happen to Boko Haram? Oh, he said, I would be really pleased if they would become Christians. He said, you don't want any justice? Well, no, he said, you can't do justice or else they wouldn't become Christians. Well, but, and the interviewer began to stammer and say, but surely they ought to pay for what they did. No, he said, they don't have to pay for what they did. I've forgiven them. Now, this is a black man. He's never been to our conference session. He doesn't even know who we are. And so we can't really say he's one of us because of Christ. And there he is on international television, and he is clearly explaining how to make it rain on the just and the unjust. And he's saying, but you can't punish these people because then they'd never come to know the Lord. You have to forgive them. See, in his mind, it's crystal clear. He's not trying to make the world a better place. He is trying to get everybody he can to a better place. And if you shoot somebody, or you bomb somebody, or you torture somebody to death, or you decapitate somebody, then their day of grace is over. And he saw this clearly, so clearly that he could sit in front of the international cameras and he could bear that testimony. And I just blessed my soul and I said, I need to know that man's secret. Well, we know what it is. It's knowing that we are the followers of Christ. And this doctrine is going to either be part of us, and it will show up in our church life, in our everyday life, in our international life, whatever that is, or it's not going to be there. And we'll see the other thing. We'll hear people crying for justice, demanding that their rights are preserved, or that somebody step in and do something. Or you'll see people making it rain. It doesn't matter if it's neighbor or church brother. They get the same kindness. That's easier said than done, but it is Jesus' way. Let's kneel for prayer.